You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. Now, before we start our program, I want to say we are delighted to welcome some new sponsors to the Radio Cafe. This is how the Radio Cafe is going to become sustainable. So if you would like to sponsor the program or know anybody who would, please contact Henry Lopez. His email is hlopez@sfnewmexican.com or call him at 986-3054. I'll also put his contact information at radiocafe.org. You can click on New Mexican there. Now, speaking of sustainability, if you've been looking to go solar in your home, Santa Fe County's Sustainability Office wants you to know that the 30% federal tax incentives are available only until the end of 2019. So if you've been thinking about going solar, now's the time to do it. If you're not sure where to start, start with Santa Fe County's Office of Sustainability. The county offers free, impartial consultation to help demystify the process and help you calculate the upfront cost of just how big a system you might need. For more information, you can contact them at 992-9832 or visit the website santafecountynm.gov/publicworks. And the Radio Cafe today is also brought to you by Morningstar Senior Living, which is building its newest community on Pacheco Street in Santa Fe. They'll be providing independent living, assisted living, and memory care to make sure that you and your loved ones can live fully and vibrantly in a safe environment. You can reach Morningstar Senior Living at 505-919-7989. That's 919-7989. You can also go to MorningstarSeniorLiving.com and let them know that you heard about it on the Radio Cafe. And now on to our program. I'm very happy now to welcome Jill Dixon. She's Development Director with the Food Depot. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today.
You do a very important piece of work here at the Food Depot. The Food Depot does this work of basically helping people who do not have enough food to get fed, to have a life. What does hunger look like here in northern New Mexico?
Honestly, it's just all around us. We like to say that hunger is closer than you think, because if you're looking for, a hungry person standing on the street, and for that to be something that looks obvious to you, you're not going to find it. But the truth is that, one in four children in New Mexico are experiencing hunger. And that means one out of every four kids you look at may not have had breakfast this morning, or they may not have dinner tonight. And that may not be that they're in active starvation, but just that they are missing meals regularly. And that's what hunger in New Mexico looks like, is our neighbors, our community members, children in our children's schools. It's all around us.
And part of the reason for that, there's multiple reasons. One of them is just simply, even people who are working, their wages are not enough to prevent making those terrible choices, like paying for a prescription versus paying for food, or paying for your heating bill versus paying for food.
Absolutely. People around us are making difficult choices all the time. And I think one of the big misnomers is that homelessness and hunger are sort of synonymous with one another. And while it may certainly be that a person experiencing homelessness is also experiencing hunger, they're not the only ones. People who have two minimum wage full-time jobs in a household can still be falling desperately short of the money they need to meet basic living expenses.
Especially if something goes wrong. If you make that calculation for the Santa Fe minimum wage, which is higher than the state minimum wage, two people in a couple, two kids, an apartment, you can just kind of maybe squeak by until something goes wrong.
Until it goes wrong. Myself as an example, I'm a single mom. And back in October, I got hit on my way back to Albuquerque. I'm a commuter. I got rear-ended by somebody else. And while certainly their insurance, which they had, thankfully, ended up covering my medical bills in the end, I was out of pocket for several hundred dollars during those months when I first was seeking treatment, and they hadn't paid me back yet. And it was tight.
Yeah.
And those are the moments that push families who are struggling, who are right on the edge, who don't have any savings because they have such meager income compared to expenses. Santa Fe's got a terrific minimum wage, but it also has an incredibly high cost of living.
Now, you also have child hunger, which is a huge problem. And one of the things that we're covering in an ongoing way on this program is child well-being. Mm-hmm. Searchlight New Mexico is doing a terrific series on this. And this is something that you are particularly aware of here.
Child hunger is probably one of the most important pieces that we're working on as a food bank. And we're developing so many partnerships in an effort to really reach all the corners where child hunger hides and shine a light on it and try to bring hope into those situations. But we do see that families with children struggle disproportionately in New Mexico, and specifically in the 9 counties that we serve as a food bank. We see hunger rates, food insecurity rates for people without children, for just regular old adults, being in the mid-teens, you know, 16%, 17% of people are experiencing food insecurity. Okay, and that's pretty bad by
itself.
That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. But when you add children into the mix, 25%.
So one in every 4 children in northern New Mexico is hungry.
Absolutely.
Now, you also have some situations where grandparents are raising their grandchildren, and that puts those kinds of families in a difficult position.
The strain is just unbelievable when you think about how you plan for retirement and what you're expecting your expenses to be, especially when you look at issues of generational poverty, where there might not have been tremendous excess and huge 401ks and IRA plans, that when you get meager savings or you have a meager 401k or pension that someone is living on.
Or Social Security.
Or just Social Security alone without any of those, depending on what their job was during their working career. And then all of a sudden you add young children back into the mix. The strain is phenomenal. Those families didn't plan to be raising young children again, but clearly you don't turn away your family.
Now, school lunches are available to kids who need them during the school year. What happens in the summer when school is over?
So the federal government supports the free breakfast and free lunch programs in the elementary schools. We, during the school year, operate our Square Meals program, which in conjunction with Youth Works in the city of Santa Fe and Children, Youth, and Families Department, with the support of the federal government, that program provides an after-school meal for children who may not have anything to eat when they go home. So it makes sure that children have 3 meals a day, which is fantastic.
So breakfast, lunch, and then their after-school meal.
Breakfast, lunch, and then a late afternoon meal. So it really helps to close that gap between, you know, children who have food security and those who do not. But the end of the school year is a really scary time for kids who receive that free breakfast and that free lunch, because it draws to a close that period. And it also increases the desperation of parents who maybe don't have the additional funds to supply additional food during the summer months. So we do have a program called Lunchbox Express. There's a couple different arms of that. The first is that we actually, using the Santa Fe Public Schools school buses, we go into the children's communities and bring lunches to them. So it eliminates transportation barriers. We have 5 different sites that we serve that way, and we bring the meals right there. The kids come out to picnic tables in like the community center of a mobile home park, and they eat with our volunteers and sit down and have a meal.
Nice.
And it's really fantastic. I mean, we're always looking for volunteers for that. So if anyone's interested in volunteering for Lunchbox Express, it's a great way to see the work of the Food Depot in action.
And meet some cool young people,
terrific young people. I think that it gives you a really like front end look at how change is happening. But we also offer support to a lot of the summer feeding program sites. So we coordinate meals for them also. And those are the USDA supported sites where meals are provided to kids at like a Boys and Girls Club kind of situation. So that covers breakfast and lunch again. So there are free meal sites throughout the summer for these kids to access, but certainly it is a time of uncertainty.
Now, you have taught public school.
I did.
And so you have kind of a perspective on kids, and you've seen hungry kids. What happens? What is it like when a kid is in school and is hungry?
I joined Teach for America out of college, and I taught down on the border of Mexico and Texas. I was like 6 miles from the border. Some of the most poverty-stricken areas that I've ever seen in my life. And it was amazing to me. It wasn't the life that I came from, but I saw behavior problems in the classroom. Towards the end of the school year, my first year of teaching there, I had a kiddo who had just been so kind and thoughtful and intentional about her work throughout the entire year. She was a fantastic student. produced really great work, was very interested in learning. And all of a sudden, in the last month of school, she became a completely different person. And I didn't understand it. It made no sense. Her behavior, she had, you know, it was just outburst after outburst. She disrupted the classroom. She didn't turn in her homework anymore. And I finally brought her in during lunch, sat down with her and said, "Can you tell me what's going on? I really don't understand." And she confessed to me that she was trying to fail because she knew that she'd get fed over the summer if she was in summer school.
Oh my goodness.
And from a survival side of things, that was a really excellent strategy.
Yeah.
But how heartbreaking that she was willing to sacrifice her academic success in order to make sure that she would get fed all summer.
And so what happened?
After I finished crying about it, we talked about, you know, different interventions that were available and, you know, different summer feeding program sites that she could access. And we got her back on track. And obviously we were not going to fail her, but we did do a lot of intervention to make sure that she and her family were going to have enough to eat over the summer because that was more important to her, and validly so.
Now, what does that look like here in New Mexico? Do you also see kids acting in what seem like maybe destructive ways, but are like survival methods for them?
I would absolutely anticipate that that's the same. The research really bears out that children who are experiencing food insecurity, especially on a regular basis, have lower attendance rates due to health a lot of the time. You know, you have poor nutrition, not enough food in your household, you're more likely to get sick. You're more likely to have high rates of absenteeism from school, lower performance as a result. I think that you and I can both attest, you know, the days that you skip breakfast, you're not at your best. And maybe there's a little hangry happening there that, you know, makes you not get along as well with your coworkers. You know, that translates for children as well. They're not prepared to learn. They're focusing on meeting their basic needs. So conflict with other children, conflict in the classroom is really common. Certainly from a brain development standpoint, when you're looking at young children who are exposed to food insecurity, the stress that exists in a poverty-stricken household, higher rates of stress, and you see implications on brain development.
Yeah.
Then that's a lifetime of disadvantage.
Right. And it keeps a class system in place that shouldn't be in place. It keeps people from rising to their full potential.
Absolutely. So when we talk about that, we frequently bring up, are we willing to have the life potential of 25% of our population be compromised?
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening right now. If 25% of children are going hungry, we are losing 25% of our future potential.
Yeah.
Is Einstein in that bunch? Is Martin Luther King in that bunch? You know, what are we losing as a society when we allow children to go hungry?
Right. And the potential that they will be magnetized toward a world of illegal activity where they can make more money selling drugs or whatever that they can't make even if they are able to land some minimum wage job somewhere.
Certainly. I mean, these are all symptoms of poverty. When you look at, you know, how do we solve hunger? Well, you don't solve hunger without solving poverty. And these are all symptomatic of that, you know, higher degrees of incarceration, lower graduation rates, hunger, all of those things are symptomatic of families that are experiencing poverty. And when children feel like there isn't hope, that there isn't a pathway to success for them, certainly that's when you start to see, you know, behaviors that maybe are even more self-destructive or even self-fulfilling of that prophecy that they will just end up like the generation before them.
Now, the Food Depot provides food, and we're going to get back to that in a moment, but how do you look at, and well, you're telling us how you look at, but how do you participate in the bigger problem of ending poverty?
I think that that's a complicated thing. We're really interested in partnerships at the Food Depot. It is absolutely essential in the work that we do, especially in working towards the eradication of poverty, that we collaborate with anyone and everyone who wants to be engaged in those types of solutions. So in a very practical way, we're working with CYFD and the USDA and Youth Works and other local organizations to try to implement childhood hunger programs and, you know, make sure that we're reaching children where they are at and filling gaps where food insecurity still exists and really maximizing our engagement with other members of the community. Mm-hmm. And doing advocacy work about the realities of hunger, this is what exists here, and making sure that everyone's aware. We can't take it for granted that everyone knows that hunger is a problem. So every single day we need to continue to raise awareness that this is a problem. It is serious. It is affecting our community health in an overall way.
CYFD, Children, Youth, and Families, mm-hmm. USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, just acronyms,
yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Oh, lingo gets me every time.
Well, you know.
But it's very important to develop those partnerships and to not operate with our blinders on. So we're always interested in forging new pathways to reaching people and developing those solutions. And advocacy is going to be one of those things. So the Farm Bill is up for renegotiation this year. That will happen in the fall. There are already been proposed cuts to children's feeding programs, to SNAP in very significant ways, SNAP being the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or food stamps. And cuts to either of those programs would have absolutely devastating effects on the people that we serve, children in particular. So we have to continue to be advocates for those who maybe can't rise up with their own voices. We want to empower those we serve to speak their truth and share their stories. But we also want to be the voice for those who don't have one and say that this is real. It's not going away. We need to work on this. And it's serious. We all need to be a part of the solution.
We're talking to Jill Dixon of the Food Depot. We're going to take just a little break right now to let you know that the Radio Cafe is brought to you by the City of Santa Fe Water Conservation. After a warm winter with lots of beautiful blue skies but very little moisture, the city is calling on its residents to renew our water conservation efforts. Visit facebook.com/savewatersantafe to take the new online water quiz and learn how to save water and contribute long-term to keeping Santa Fe green and healthy. You'll also find out how to earn hundreds and even thousands of dollars by making your home and workplace more water-wise. Once again, that's facebook.com/savewatersantafe. And now we return to our program with Jill Dixon from the Food Depot.
When you think about food depots, and sometimes there are requests for food, and they always say bring non-perishable food, but perishable food is basically fresh fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. and it's really important for people to eat that because it's part of a healthy diet. How do you make that combination of, you know, food from cans, let's say, mm-hmm. and fresh food?
You know, one of the biggest priorities for the Food Depot in our most recent strategic planning process was getting to have 50% of our overall food distribution be fruits and vegetables. A percentage of that is going to come from canned fruits and vegetables because we have a population, such as those experiencing homelessness, who don't have the option of fresh produce. So much as canned is more necessary in those situations. I'm super happy to say that just a year into that planning process, we have actually met that goal. That is achieved less through the food drive piece, which you reference when we're asking for donations of non-perishable items. That represents a small portion of the food that we acquire, but we are also working with a network of regional food banks and other retailers and farmers to acquire their produce in mass quantity. We provide enough food for 450,000 meals every month. That's 540,000 pounds of food every single month.
Wow.
And a significant percentage of that is fresh produce at this point. And that's in part, you know, as an example, we have a relationship with the Nogales Food Bank. Nogales's border crossing is one of the single largest entry points for produce into the United States. And on the U.S. side, a retailer can look at a load and deny it for any reason. Oh, the apples look like they're 4 inches instead of 5 inches. And they can just turn it down. And the truck driver at that point needs to get rid of that load of food. And traditionally what you would have happen is that they would take it to the dump. So the Nogales Food Bank has stepped forward as a leader in the region for rescuing food.
Yeah.
And they step in and they say, okay, this is obviously more than we can distribute in Nogales. But hey, regional food banks, we have 40,000 pounds of tomatoes up for grabs. Let me know
oh
if you can get
them.
So our director of warehouse operations, Justin Peters, is constantly on his phone looking for alerts. He gets them all the time. And it's pretty much a first come, first serve. So he hits the button, says, okay, here's a trucking company. We can get somebody there in an hour. And we get that shipment of fresh produce into the food bank. So at this point, almost half of the food that we're distributing is fruits and vegetables. And of that 50%, 46% is fresh produce.
How does that then get to people? I mean, you've talked about a couple of programs involving children, but then how does the rest of it work?
Well, we distribute food through two mechanisms. One, and this is about 70% of our operation, is through support of other nonprofit programs. We call them our partner agencies, but they're other institutions that you would recognize, such as Bienvenidos or Kitchen Angels or Feeding Santa Fe. They partner with us to get their food so they can focus on their primary mission. So our job is to source the food and make it available to them. So the first mechanism by which we distribute the food is through the partner agencies. We put out a list of our offerings for the week. This is what we have in inventory. What do you need? And then we provide free delivery of that food to them. The second mechanism by which we distribute food is our 7 direct service programs. That represents about 30% of the food that we distribute overall. And that helps to get food to people in specific gaps that we've recognized where there isn't maybe a food pantry in existence or a side of town where transportation is an issue. One of those biggest mechanisms is the Mobile Food Pantry program, which is a direct service program that we operate. Functions mostly in rural areas, like Ojo Caliente and Abiquiu and El Rito. And we take food into those communities on a monthly basis. Local community volunteers, typically people who are recipients of the food pantry itself, help to unload the truck and prepare the food for distribution. And then it's distributed right there in the moment. And it's a very incredible mix of bread and eggs and milk and fresh produce with staple foods as well, like beans and rice and canned foods.
What's it like for the people receiving the food? Is there a sense, I mean, I'm sure there's gratitude. Is there also there a sense of embarrassment or humiliation?
I think that the stigma around experiencing food insecurity remains. My experience has been that it's hard for someone to come forward and say that they need that help. You know, that costs a person something. But at the same time, I have never failed to see complete gratitude that the community is generous enough to make this support possible. You're typically seeing families that are literally down to their final options. Their work or their social security has provided this much money that gets them this far, and then maybe they get some food stamp assistance and that's taken them this far. But that last week of the month, they don't know how they're going to feed their families if they don't get it from a food bank or one of our partners.
Another thing that you provide is pet food.
Yes. And that is explicitly in rural communities. The need came up several years ago that in the rural communities, especially where there was a significant lack of access to shelters and other animal welfare organizations that might provide this service, that the people that we were serving with our mobile food pantry programs were sharing their meager human food supply with their pets.
Yeah.
And I think that it's fair to acknowledge that, you know, people who are struggling weren't necessarily always struggling, you know, and maybe a family, a grandparents that took in their grandchildren were perfectly able to feed their pets beforehand, but struggled to do so now, that there's additional financial burden, or an illness has changed their financial circumstances as well. And the idea of giving up a pet, you know, you and I were talking about our dogs that we've had for so many years, that the idea of giving up a member of your family after a certain time is just excruciating.
Yeah.
So the Food for Pets program seeks to provide a supplemental supply of pet food, 15 pounds a month for dogs and 3 pounds a month for cats. Not everything that you would need, but just enough to help make ends meet.
Yeah.
To recipients of our mobile food pantry human food allocation. So they do a really brief application just to register their name and how many pets they have and the names of those pets. And then they get an allocation of pet food from us.
How did the Food Depot begin?
Oh, goodness. We were incorporated as a 501c3 nonprofit back in 1994. The original intention in those days was sort of to serve as a food rescue organization. So there was quite a lot of rescuing food from restaurants, for example, and maybe connecting that dot to, you know, a homeless shelter that was distributing a meal that evening or that type of thing. And when Sherry Hooper, our executive director, took over 16 years ago, we had just expanded into our middle building, I guess, the Cole Green Angel Depot. And she brought with her this traditional food banking experience from a major food bank in Kansas City. And she really brought that model to us and recognized that New Mexico, Northern New Mexico in particular, really needed a food bank. So we teamed up with Roadrunner and Feeding America and started to follow a traditional food banking model of acquiring food and distributing it to a network of nonprofit partners. And from that point, we really exploded in our service. So from maybe distributing 500,000 pounds of food, we are now distributing 6.5 million pounds of food a year.
Good heavens. Which is great and sad at the same time.
Yeah. I think that that's sort of the tragedy about this being joyful work. I mean, yeah. It's a fantastic feeling to provide someone who is hungry right now with food right now. But we are so interested in working on solutions that put us out of business.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be the best thing ever.
Are you still working with restaurants?
Not really. That has sort of borne out to not be really worth the time invested in it. Restaurants have gotten infinitely more efficient in their operation. And there's issues of food safety around like how long the food has been kept at temperature and those sorts of things. So when you're looking at volume and time invested and staff time invested, that's not really the place where there's a lot of potential for that. If restaurants and other places like that are interested in connecting those dots, we typically forge a connection between them and a soup kitchen directly so that their overage can go right to where it belongs without touching us as the middleman.
Right, right. I've always wondered if they couldn't, and maybe some people do this, but whatever leftovers are from somebody's plate where they put it in a barrel that gets picked up by a farmer for their pigs once a week or once a day or whatever.
You know, we do that here.
Do you?
Yeah, we get a lot of donations from all of our local grocery store partners. And we like to say we get the good, the bad, and the ugly. So certainly when you're in a grocery store buying apples, you're not buying the ones that have bruises. But those will end up with us.
Yeah.
And we have volunteers. We have this incredible force of volunteers that donated over 20,000 hours of their time last year. Just makes our work possible. It's incredible. And those volunteers will go through and cull the produce that comes into the food bank and peel off the outer layers of the cabbage so that it looks fresh again. And they'll look at the apples and say, okay, this one is way too far gone. And it goes in bucket A. And this one's sort of getting there and needs to go really quickly. And this one is really completely okay. And we have relationships with pig farmers and compost farmers to be able to make use of that waste.
Now, you're based here in Santa Fe. You're reaching cities and towns all over northern New Mexico. You're reaching rural areas. What are the gaps that are still there that you would like to fill in the future?
We're still looking for those places. So we're serving 9 counties in northern New Mexico. That's 26,000 square miles. And
oh my goodness.
It's really huge. And you know as well as I that there are some areas in New Mexico that, you know, we can call ourselves a town, but maybe there's 48 people living there.
Right.
And they're few and far between. So as stewards of the investment that our donors make, we want to always make sure that we are stretching every dollar to provide the maximum number of meals and making sure that everyone has the opportunity to be fed, but doing it intelligently. We want to work smarter, not harder. So I think that part of the work that we're doing now is examining all of our programs and making sure that they're as efficient as they possibly can be, and looking maybe not necessarily in at whether or not there are people that need to be fed that aren't being fed, because we feel like we're doing a pretty good job there, but making sure that we're giving enough food to the people that we're already providing food to. So if the mobile food pantry is doing a monthly distribution, is there a need to do it twice a month? And is the question really depth rather than breadth? And that's really the place that the Food Depot is at now, is, you know, listening to our communities and trying to hear whether or not there is a gap. Chimayo is a good example. Chimayo didn't have any service provided there for years, and we had been wanting to get something started. And in the last year, we opened up 2 different pantry distributions up there, one a mobile food pantry and one a traditional food pantry. And we're feeding an additional 450 people a month.
Now, a good section of northern New Mexico is areas where people used to grow their own food, where there was an acequia system, where there were coherent communities, and a lot of that was broken for historical reasons that we could talk about all day, but here we have the situation that we're in now, and there is a kind of revival of agriculture that I see going on, and more people who want to grow their own food. Do you see any of that happening?
You know, we're doing an agency relations council. It's a capacity building project out in Rio Arriba County, and there are definitely people there that are representing institutions that are trying to raise awareness and re-educate about home gardens and the value of, you know, farming at least for your family or within your community to help provide, especially some of that fresh produce that tends to be lacking. So certainly we see that there's movements around that, you know, community farms. There are different institutions that are really interested in trying to like reinvigorate people in that. I think that when we look at obstacles, there are some real ones to that piece. Gardening takes work. I think anybody who's had a home garden knows that you need to have time, you need to have water, you need to have knowledge. Yeah. You know, when the squash bugs come in, what do you do? Besides just throw up your hands and call it a loss.
And it's hard, and also to grow enough food even for one person in northern New Mexico with the kind of rain we have is no joke.
It's not easy.
It's not easy.
And, you know, it also depends to some extent on whether or not you own your home or you're renting. So while there are certainly very tangible obstacles to being able to grow your own food and a great enough variety of it to supplement your food supply, it's certainly an option that is out there. I think that there are a lot of people doing incredible work around raising that kind of awareness, and it should definitely be a piece of the solution.
Yet another thing that you do is disaster relief. Yeah. What kind of disasters are you seeing?
Well, typically, you know, we're not Hawaii, so that's not our disaster bucket, thank goodness, but we obviously are preparing for fire season. I think you know as well as I do that our winter was paltry at best in the moisture department. So we're on high alert. Our role in fires is typically to act as sort of a command central and supply food and water to first responders that are fighting fires, as well as to people who may have been evacuated due to a fire. So we would bring in, you know, ready-to-eat meals or MREs and water to people who are in shelter.
MREs?
Meals ready to eat.
Ah, okay.
It's like the military expression, I think. They're kind of like astronaut meals.
Right, right.
But we would bring those into shelter situations. We would bring food out to first responders for people to be preparing meals for them. We're sort of the first point of response on that. We were very active in Hurricane Harvey, for example, when people wanted to respond locally. We were the output, or, you know, where people outpost where people needed to bring in the food. So we had donation collection stations here at the Food Depot over on Siler Road. We were accepting water, we were accepting canned food, and we were coordinating with Feeding America at the national level to get those distributions out to Houston.
If somebody's listening right now who might need food and isn't getting the food they need, and or know somebody else mm-hmm. who is in that position, what should they do?
Well, definitely call us, 471-1633, extension 112. You can connect with us and we can get you a resource list that will contain not just the different open to the public food distribution entities in Santa Fe, but we'll also give you some other resources that you may need in relationship to housing and utilities support and so forth. You can always visit us here at the Food Depot over at 1222A Siler Road. We can give you that resource list in person.
It's the building in the back.
Building in the back. Don't go to the building in the front, or you can. They'll tell you to come back here.
Exactly.
But we don't distribute food directly from our warehouse. That's important for people to know to manage expectations. But we do want to refer you to a food pantry where you can develop a relationship and people can help provide you with the service that you need on a consistent basis.
How do you keep going? I mean, you said you've got many, many volunteers.
Yes.
Are you asking for donations of food, of funding? What do you need?
You know, funding is, I will say, I mean, I'm the development director, so you'd probably expect this. But we are able to, through our relationships like we have with Nogales Food Bank, we're able to leverage every dollar that's donated to provide four meals. So if you're making the choice between donating food that you've purchased versus just donating money to us, please give the money. We have the capacity to buy in bulk and buy unlabeled, unpackaged foods, and we can definitely source that food at a cheaper rate than anyone can buy it in the store for. So definitely financial contributions are absolutely essential. We absolutely advocate people doing food drives on our behalf. That doubles as an advocacy opportunity where you're raising awareness about the need for food and hunger in our community, and you're also generating food donations. So definitely host a food drive, have it in place of a graduation party or at your graduation party or bat mitzvahs, bar mitzvahs, sweet 16s.
Right.
Quinceañeras. There's all these really fantastic ways to get involved. But we definitely need people to advocate. We need people to volunteer. I mean, if the only thing that you do this year is call your legislators and say, it's totally unacceptable to me that we cut food stamps for children, then that's a win.
Right.
If the only thing you can do is pick up a phone and call a legislator and tell them to take childhood hunger seriously, that's absolutely essential. So donate, advocate, volunteer, get involved in whatever way you can. You can visit us at thefooddepot.org and just email us from there what you're interested in doing. There's a lot of ways that you can be part of the solution.
Thefooddepot.org is the website, and the phone number is 505-471-1633, extension 112. Jill Dixon is Development Director with the Food Depot. Anything else you want to let people know before we go?
Thank you. We have an incredibly philanthropic community that is always so responsive and supportive of the many, many different initiatives we launch here at the Food Depot, and we're so grateful. So please keep your faith in us. Keep investing in our community with us. We're glad to have you, and we'd like to see you get engaged in whatever way fits.
Jill Dixon, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.